Hey, are you guys still talking, or did my Skype f*** out again? Oh, God, don't do that to me. Yeah, oh, my God.
So we were doing the silence thing at the beginning of the show, and I swear, I was actually, I was just pressing the button to start my time to start the show when you said that. So that's the least. Hello again.
And
welcome to another episode of Monday Night Magic. This is episode 431. Or so I'm told. That joke worked better before truncate silence. But anyway, it is episode number 431. You have not traveled back.
How about them alpha packs?
Yet. I don't think Monday Night Magic was around for alpha.
I don't know, Papa Bear. What do you think, Gavin?
Well, you know, guys, hold on. I think I read about something in my sleep study I was working on this month. Hold on. I can dredge up a story, I'm sure.
So I was watching this awful, awful B-movie.
Was it Vampgeddon?
No, maybe it was,
Hamster Claws?
The one with the tire.
Rubber?
Oh, tire's actually pretty good.
Hey, have you guys ever seen the film Redneck Zombies? Now, that's a really bad film.
No, but I visited Jack once.
Oh,
I didn't know it was there, but I mean, it was accurate.
Hey, we are derailed. Before we go too much further, I should mention that the captain of this sinking vessel has already abandoned ship. Chewie is not here tonight. And by maritime law, that means that any of us can lay claim to it. So I am claiming this ship until such time as it sinks, which I think happened about a minute and 36 seconds ago, according to my timer. But I am Clues.
Hi, Clues.
I'm a guy, let's say. I judge. I play magic. I look at the stars. Not those kind of stars. Look up. Those kind of stars. That's right. And I'm joined this week by everyone's favorite reoccurring goblin, that would be Squee.
Hi, everybody. I am Squee, and I apparently don't suck at magic anymore. So, yay.
Who are you, and where's Squee?
I don't know.
Good answer. Also with us tonight is the one, the only, the man, the myth, the legend, the most somethingest man in magic. I don't think hated is actually correct anymore, but it is Jack Lacroix.
Hey, everybody. I just wanted to say thank you very much for the donations last week for MTG Bro Deals. We got double what we needed, and we managed to pick up some new talent. So you guys are going to see a very different Bro Deal starting here very soon, and we appreciate all the hard work. Thank you again.
Hooray. Thank you, community, for coming through.
Yay.
I have to say that you may oftentimes in the news what you'll hear about is the negative aspects of this community, but honestly, there is... There's a huge amount of goodwill and good vibes in this community that are just quiet most of the time. But when they mobilize,
within two donations, we actually had what we needed. But they just kept coming in, and we were like, oh, we can compensate our writers finally. This is fantastic.
Haha, capitalism.
Yep, or charity. I also think me batting my big baby green eyes at people worked quite well too. Please give us money and don't let our site die.
Indeed. Indeed. That is good to hear. So we have a ton of things in the show notes this week, but we're going to try and keep it a reasonable length because some of these things don't actually require a huge amount of discussion. But we do have a couple of tournaments to report on. So we had two GPs going on this weekend, and the first one to mention is Grand Prix Orlando down in, let's say, sunny Florida. I can't actually prove that because I was inside all day, so I think it was sunny.
Down in Disney World's backyard.
That's right. Right down there. There were people wearing mouse ears.
Appropriate
at the tournament, which was
apparently cool. There was also a really cool playmat that we saw pictures of for a long time.
There was.
Sounds like it was a real Mickey Mouse operation.
I see what you did there. We did get pins. The pins were kind of cool.
Did you have to go through 1,000 hoops to get 1,000 pins?
I didn't because I was a judge.
Good call. So you've already been through 1,000 hoops and now you're getting compensated.
Yeah. I mean, there were in fact, 2,273 hoops. I want to say, I think that was the number of players. It was 2,200 something. We were just shy of 2,300 players. And the format was in fact Khans of Tarkir sealed.
Yeah.
And you all know what that means.
Dual color decks with a light splash.
Lots of game losses for Morph. That's absolutely correct. So.
Yeah.
Look, we warned you guys about it ahead of time. I think we had a public service announcement on this show, in fact, last week. But I just want to reiterate again, look, with Morph, in a competitive setting, any time that morph creature leaves the stack or leaves the battlefield for any reason to go anywhere, you reveal it. That includes at the end of the game. So here, how would you like this for feel bads? Let me tell you the most feel bad-y feel bad of the whole weekend that I'm aware of.
I might have to top it, but go ahead.
So players are playing their game. Player A wins the game, grabs his cards, slams them together, starts shuffling his deck, fails to reveal his morph cards. So judge is called. Judge comes to the table. Judge says, yeah, you didn't reveal that. I'm sorry, but that game you just won? No, you just lost it. So there was, you know, some discussion back and forth. The head judge might have gotten involved, but that ruling was upheld because that is exactly how that works. Goes away. They play game two. Player A wins game two, grabs his cards to shuffle, and you know where I'm going with this, don't you?
Aww.
Fails to reveal again, and loses that game as well.
That's pretty sad.
And this was, I'm pretty sure this was
where
fairly...
the hell are the still had all these people? Like, where are you people? You people were prepared as crap for cons. What happened?
Yeah, you know, Jack raises a very valid point, because normally it's all we can do to force you to, you know, just stop just staring at your cards and talking about how the game could have gone on. But nope.
I'm pretty confident that everyone knows this is really just a case of muscle memory, pick things up, don't think about it, oh crap.
Wait, are you pretty confident?
I'm not making con jokes.
Okay.
There are some jokes that are beneath me, and they are con puns.
Oh, so. But there's so many of them.
That's why they're bad.
Anyway,
every time I think of limited, I get a little constipated. You laughed. Somewhere somebody laughed.
Yeah. It probably wasn't Steve. So, yeah, the game losses for Morph were probably the most disheartening things that happened all weekend. It was, yeah. We always felt bad doing it, but I mean, we have clear policies set out for this.
So on that note, and we'll come back to this in more detail later, but I was playing at a BTQ this weekend and my third round opponent picked up his cards after beating me game one. Realized he did it after he put them in the library, called himself out on it. We called a judge. He got the game loss. It was very sad. He won game two. So he would have just straight up won the round. Then I won game three. And so I ended up getting the round win off of him calling himself out like a good person. And I felt really bad about it. I mean, it's miserable as the opponent because like you get a win that you don't feel like you earned. And for people that just want to win at any cost, which I don't actually think as many of you are out there as you pretend to be, it's not the same as actually feeling like you won that round. It actually feels really bad.
Yeah, it really does.
Like it threw both of us on tilt a little bit to the point where I was putting my cards face down and naming what they were out of habit. Because normally if you play a card and you tell them what it is in case they don't know. I was doing that with morph cards and very fortunate that neither one of us actually knew the names of half the cards in this set or it would have been a real problem. I couldn't do this later in the format, but
every time I see the word Rakasha Kakaka, I just think of like that scene from Ace Ventura where he's like, Shakakaka!
I think it's Rakshasa actually.
Rakshasa, soy sauce, whatever you call it.
Shaka Khan, Shaka Khan?
Shaka Khan. Shaka Khan.
All right. So yeah, that's sad. So how about Orlando?
Yeah, okay. So Orlando happened. And it was a pretty good weekend overall. I was down there judging. We had a pretty good staff. Really nice hall. The Orange County Convention Center was pretty nice.
That is probably not a unique name.
Probably not. I suspect there are a couple of them. But there were some interesting things that went on. I will be the first to admit, and I'm going to go ahead and apologize to the players out there. We know that the turnaround times on day one were pretty bad. We were averaging a ballpark an hour and 20 minutes from the beginning of one round to the beginning of next round. Cons is a slow format. Cons Limited. There were tons of matches that went to time. Tons of them. And with a room that big, it was tough making sure that we got all the results in a timely fashion. In at least a couple of cases, we had match slips go missing. Pro tip to players, never put your match slip in your pocket, ever, for any reason. Match slips don't go there. give them to a judge or take them to the little basket, you know, do the walk of victory. That's just fine, but don't put them in a pocket.
Was it mostly a matter of players with like opposing Abzan decks just constantly building up and never attacking?
Yeah, I was going to say, in my experience, what it really seemed to be, what really made the format so slow is it was very easy to create a clogged board state.
Yeah.
Because just about everybody had at worst a turn three play. And from there, it just built up and it's like, oh, do I have enough guys to overpower his? Nope. Okay, I'll wait a turn. Do I have him now? Nope. Okay, I'll wait a turn. Yeah,
there's also that incentive to not attack or block with your three drop,
yeah,
which over the course of, you know, a match actually is significant damage because they don't want to attack with or block with it. And then they want to wait till turn five or six or whatever and unmorph it, at which point they've done nothing for like three turns. And they haven't built their board that much more either because they need to leave the mana open and it just slows it down. That said, if, you know, the Mardu or the Jeskai deck shows up, bam, round over. One way or the other, round over.
That's right, one way or the other. And let's see now, what else did we... And of course, it being a relatively new set, I mean, yes, we had the pre-release a couple of weeks ago, but still, there were a lot of folks who weren't completely familiar with the cards, so there's a lot of card reading that went on. There's still a lot of confusion about how Morph works. There's the one guy, I forget what the card is called, but he's the one that when you unmorph him, you can counter a spell and then you can cast that spell without paying its mana cost. The interaction of that guy and morph spells, that confused the heck out of everybody. Can I only cast it for its morph cost then? Can I not cast it for its morph cost? Can I keep casting it after he's dead? How does this work? So a lot of questions with that one came up. Other than that, it was mostly smooth, you know, just lots of clogged board states.
Out of curiosity, have you run into people using their phones as life counters and having to give warnings and stuff for that?
Not a lot. There still are a few people who are doing it. It is frowned upon. The electronics device policy is no. That's pretty much how it's summed up. You should be using paper, just seriously. Just pro tip, just paper.
I just asked because an announcement was made at the beginning of the PTQ that we were at, and people seemed to get it pretty quick, but it is something that's really easy to forget about, and I imagine at a Grand Prix with so many more people, it would come up more.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, any time you have, you know, let's say eight or more Magic players, there will be confusion. Day two was a bit smoother. Of course, the numbers were a lot smaller. We had 233 folks make day two. But of course, you have the extra logistical mess of doing a couple of drafts in day two. But that went okay. Some interesting stuff towards the end of that. I suppose anyone who followed the coverage knows that both Melissa DeTora and Frank Lepore made the top eight.
They got to draw in together, didn't they?
They did. And here's the funny thing. And I'm not going to say where I heard this, but I might have overheard the statistic that had they not drawn, because, okay, for those who don't know, they are a couple. They both went like 8-1 on day one. And they were both, they were ranked, I don't know if they were ranked 1 and 2 coming into round 15, but they were like right up there. So they were paired up in round 15, the final round of Swiss. And I was told that if Melissa forced him to play and beat him, she could knock him to 9th.
I could see that happening. Like if you actually look at the point spread at the end, it was a massive tie from like 5th through like 9th or something in there. It was like really close.
Yeah, I thought it was actually a clean cut coming into the top eight.
Oh, no, but what I'm saying is, like, if he went from, difference, it would have completely happened.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's true or not. I haven't went back to look at the numbers, but that's what I heard, and it would have been funny, but that's totally not what they did. They drew into top eight, because that's actually how that works in the real world, is that when people are a lock for top eight, they generally just draw into top eight, because it's easier that way.
It's less risky.
Yeah, way less risky. So there you go. And I believe Melissa made it all the way to the finals.
Yes.
But did not quite get there. Came very, very close. But the winner of it all of the GP with Cons of Tarkir Limited was Eugene Huang. Huang? Look, I'm terrible with pronouncing names. Eugene won it, netting himself a cool $4,000 for his troubles. And was our champion, at least of this one.
Yeah, when I sent Chewy the list of the top eight yesterday, he pointed out that he was absolutely amazed that Solmalka made it, because he didn't know Solmalka was still playing, and he's the guy who pretty much made the Rock deck. So neat.
Yeah, definitely neat. But you know, players seem to be enjoying the format pretty well. I'm not gonna yet say that Khans of Tarkir is better than Theros. I'll say I like it better.
In terms of limited?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm biased, but I think it is.
Okay,
I think it has a lot more unique ways to play than just the major gimmick of each one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are tools there to just make a straight-up morph deck, or you can make the Black-White Warriors deck, or you can make any of the main mechanics, or you can mix and match. You can go five color. It's just very flexible. Whereas your options back in Theros were a lot more streamlined, which was, namely, did you get the heroic deck? You didn't get the heroic deck. Oh, well, I hope you got a monstrous deck, because most of the other things just don't do much. I mean, there were archetypes there, but they weren't balanced.
Mm-hmm.
This one, there isn't a best archetype yet. A lot of people will argue that the Abzan one's the best, but I think that's because a lot of players are more comfortable with a sit back and win with bigger guys attack, which is honestly a little bit easier. But the Jeskai tempo deck will destroy decks. The spreading out and having a whole bunch of guys Mardu strategy completely works. Like, they're all viable, and I think that's just a healthier format. But admittedly, we're also only, what, like 3 weeks into this?
Yeah, so, something like that.
I mean, it's really easy to say that it's wide open right now before we've cracked it. So it could very well settle later, but I think there's a lot more potential here. So we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, definitely. It will be interesting to watch this format develop. And we've got the Pro Tour coming up, right?
Next weekend.
Yeah, so that means that, you know, we should see the new face of Standard really reveal itself next week.
Yeah.
But for now, we just have Limited, and, you know, that's fine. It was an enjoyable tournament overall. I know they fired a god-awful number of side events. I was working the main event both days, so I didn't get over to the other side of the room much. But we were in triple digits for eight-man drafts, so guess folks like it, let's
nice.
Say. But before we, you know, send Grand Prix Orlando into the sunset, the rest of your top eight, in order of finishing, in case you were curious, in second place was Melissa DeTora, then, the aforementioned Saul, Malka?
I believe so.
I think it's Malka, came in third, Artur Vilela? There's too many L's in there.
The man in the haters shirt.
Yeah, because haters gonna. She's in fourth place. Frank Lepore took fifth. Harry Corvese took sixth. Ian Farnug and Pierre Mondin round out your top eight. We would tell you about their decks, but they are limited decks. So we
they have
not
40
tell
cards.
You. Yeah, well, that wasn't true of everybody's limited deck. Let me tell you, Deck Checks was quite busy on day two. Apparently registering decks is still a tricky thing. Look, folks, if you're going to go to a limited competitive event, take the time to learn how to properly fill out a limited deck reg sheet. That's all I'm saying. And for the love of God and all that's holy, stop using Roman numerals.
Yeah, they're going to tell you directly not to do that, and you're going to do it anyway, and then we're going to hate you.
Yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen. And also, seriously, God, look, I understand that handwriting is not a thing that we teach in schools anymore. I understand exactly. That we type, but just take a few extra seconds to make your, you know, twos look like twos and your threes look like threes. What I'm saying is we can't read your handwriting.
This Here's a hint. Use a straight vertical line for one. Don't put the little thing on the top or the line across the bottom, because in some handwriting, that looks like a two, and you're just going to confuse everyone.
Yeah, it almost always looks like a two. Seriously, a one is just a vertical stick. That's all you need. Okay. All right, decklist rant over. Let's talk about the top five cards.
Top five cards.
Yay, the top five cards. Number five was Nomad Outpost. So
that is the Mardu one.
That is, in fact, the Mardu one, which I gotta say, if you're gonna play anything, play Mardu.
I'm a fan.
Number four, Butcher of the Horde, because seriously, have you read this card?
Beat stick.
Yeah.
It's totally an airborne beat stick. Like, it has abilities. Who cares? It's 5/4 flyer for four.
Yeah.
I mean, you want anything else? Sure. Sack something if you feel like it. Run threat and we don't care. It's awesome. That's just great.
Number three is Snowhorn Rider. which is the 5/5 with trample for what, six? Yeah, six.
Yep, teamer.
He's a teamer because punching bears.
It's really good.
Bears.
5/5 is remarkably large. I mean, this format seems like a lot of things are big, but honestly, when the power of teamer is floating around four, a 5/5 will wreck things. Mm-hmm. And very few things can actually stand up to that. You can actually kill the annoying walls that they drop in the early turns when you get to 5 power. So it's important.
Number two, Ghostfire Blade. Yeah, that's right. I said it.
That's unexpected.
I was very surprised by that. I did not expect this card to be all that important, but apparently in, I think it was the day one sealed play of the 8 players who finished the day undefeated, 5 of them were running Ghostfire Blade.
I believe it, though. That's honestly hilarious. It's a really nice equipment for your morph creatures, and a lot of people don't make the logical connection that you can equip it to your not morph creatures, too.
Yeah.
It's still +2/+2, and the best thing, you equip it to your morph creature, and then you flip your morph creature back over, or I'm sorry, you unmorph it.
Unmorph it, yeah.
Yeah, using the right terminology. You unmorph it, and it still has that as well. And some of these things unmorph for revealing a card, so you get a really sweet deal.
Yeah, and that extra +2/+2 makes a huge difference when you've got those stalled board states.
It's especially good if you happen to have the Death Touch one, mm-hmm. because then it'll actually survive the combat.
Yeah, yeah, or give something first strike.
Yeah, it's just great.
Yeah, so the number one card is a total cop-out because it's Morph.
Yeah,
which is not a card.
A gray ogre.
Yeah, seriously, look, Morph is not a card. It's a mechanic, and that's kind of cool.
I wish the Morph reminder cards weren't quite as prevalent as they are, too.
Yeah, they totally give you plenty of... All day long, people were like, hey, have you got the warrior token? Or, hey, have you got that, a warrior spirit token? And I'm like, yeah. No, I got this whole fistful of Morph things, though. You want to use... No, you don't want...
The one that you... Like, I mean, all tokens are optional, but honestly, that one is extra optional.
Yeah, hey, by the way, folks out there, you know how for a long time judges have been giving you a hard time when you're just using a face-down card as a token?
Oh, yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, do you see why we do that now? Like, in particular, look, even if you're like, oh, that doesn't matter because Morph's not in the set. Well, hey, look, Morph is now in the set, so cut it out.
Yeah.
We will give you a token, or if you call the right judge at the right time, he will handcraft you a token with unique artwork.
I really hope he takes a morphed card and he tears it in half so that you can have two of them.
No, usually I use the... I carry around this little box of little plain white cards. They actually come as the backing card in the FNM promos.
Oh, okay.
And so anytime I find a player who's got a token problem, if I'm not busy with another judge call, I whip out a Sharpie and I draw them a stick figure token and give it to them.
Oh, that's cute.
So, in fact, I encountered a listener who was just tickled pink when I made him, I think it was a stick figure warrior in this case.
Nice.
Yeah. So anyway, those were your top five cards from Orlando. Anything else we want to talk about Orlando? I think there is one bit of news in the show notes to at least mention. This tournament was run by Star City Games, and they are actively soliciting your feedback. So if you were at GP Orlando and you have some constructive, preferably constructive criticism, that would be awesome. There is, I believe, a thread on Reddit to do that. So please go. Let them know what you like. Let them know what you didn't like. They were doing one thing that was kind of unique that, okay, to go back to the subject of the round turnaround times for just one moment. The round turnaround times on Saturday were pretty bad, but Star City was trying something that in the end might be better. So for those of you who don't know, we have to run a split tournament if we have more than 1,998 players. And we have to do that because the tournament software cannot create a table number higher than 999. It just refuses to do it. Look, it's
just
a limitation.
You're running this thing on a Super Nintendo.
We're running this thing actually on a Super Nintendo. Now, we've got one of those Game Shark cartridges.
Mamma mia! It's called a Game Genie if it's on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry. We have one of those Game Genie cartridges. But anyway, that is an issue. And normally what we do is we have like the red tournament and the blue tournament or the green tournament. We give them names. This time they gave them the Jeskai and the Teemer were the names of the two tournaments.
Oh, man.
But to try and make life easier, They were running another piece of software that took the output from the tournaments.
Oh, this sounds bad even before we get into it.
Well, wait for it. And it takes the table numbers and it reassigns them in just a straight order so that you don't have to worry about, oh, am I at table 7 of the green tournament or table 7 of the red tournament? Don't have to worry about any of that. And it was completely transparent to the players. And it worked great. The only difference was that your match result slip had either Teemer or Jeskai on it, and the Teemer went to one scorekeeper and the Jeskai went to another scorekeeper. That was it. Now, this worked fine, except for one teeny tiny little problem. There was a bug in the code. So at the end of the round, here's a little inside baseball for you. At the end of the round, we get a printout from the scorekeeper of all of the outstanding tables. And then we send judges out to figure out what's going on with those matches and make sure that they're in turns and that they get turned in a timely fashion. Except that, yeah, that didn't actually work for the first like 3 rounds, like at all. Because of a bug. It was printing out tables, but those tables may or may not have actually been outstanding. But due to the hard work and diligence of several Star City folks who shall remain nameless, although they know who they are and you guys did an awesome job, they worked on the code on the fly between rounds and got that ironed out so that by later in the day, that software was working how it was supposed to from a judge's standpoint as well as a player's standpoint.
Please, what was it wrote in, if you don't mind me asking?
I actually have no idea, to be honest with you. That was all happening on the stage, and I was never up there. Okay. I mean, I can probably find out if you really want to know, but it was interesting. And like I said, by later in the day, they had refined the system, and it was working very, very well. Incidentally, this is also the reason why your tiebreakers don't carry over into day 2 anytime this has to happen, because they are two completely separate tournaments that have all these tiebreakers in them. And so going into day 2, we can import your match points, but that's all we can import. And so that's why they reset.
Well, the more you know, kids.
Exactly.
I actually like that, because that means that the people that started it with buys don't get 2 days of benefits out of it.
Right. They just get the one.
Yeah.
So there you go. I think that's everything I wanted to say about GP Orlando, except a big thank you to all of the staff and the players and everybody, frankly, who made it a good time. Also, if you were there and you ate in a little food court in the venue, the Chinese food was really good.
Always good.
It was the best value, too. For, you know, con food, it wasn't really a value per se. All right, so anything else for GP Orlando, or shall we move on?
Shanghai.
Let's go to GP Shanghai, which was also
limited,
right?
Yes.
So, joy.
Once again, we do not need to talk about the deck lists. If you'd like to see them, there will be a link in the show notes to the event, and you can have a look at those if you really want to. But I'll give you a hint. There were some creatures. Some of them had morph, and there was some removal.
Yep.
Those were probably the best decks. Now then, I read all the winners of the last tournament, so one of you gets to screw these pronunciations up. So,
Bill, you do it. I'm digging through cards.
Yeah, okay. With profuse apologies in advance, like really profuse apologies. All right, so looking over here at the standings, are they actually in order in the pictures? They were in the old one, but here it just says see profile, so that makes me not as...
Yeah, here bad. I can't quite tell. I think so?
I think they are based on the brackets, so we're just going to go with that. So in addition to apologizing for when I mispronounce your names, I also apologize if I mispronounce your order. But it looks like it was won by Yu Yen, who came out on top with a 40-card deck. Yeah.
Nice.
And then coming in second, we have what I believe is Zhu Su. I have no idea. Not quite. Third place, we have Tamada Roichi. Fourth place, we have Han Bing. Fifth place, we have a man who looks like Shuhei Nakamura with his hand in front of his eyes, so I don't know for sure. Oh, wait, there's his name. Yeah, it's Shuhei Nakamura. Your ruse fools no one. Sixth place, we have Liu Yuchen. Seventh, we have Zhang Menkui, or Q, I'm sorry. And in eighth, we have Oh Joo Hyun. So, good job, all of you people, and I'm really impressed if you can actually hear me.
And
if I mispronounced your name, it's Chewy's fault.
That's right. Send an email to Chewy at
jack@mtgcast.com.
So I was checking while you're reading them off. Yes, they did all run 40-card decks. So
excellent.
Nobody went for the 41-card special.
Good for them.
Even though I have seen it done.
Not generally a good idea, but you can do it.
Hey, a quick note about pronunciations. I want to apologize to absolutely everyone that I talked to on day two, because on day two, the judges collect the slips just to, you know, eliminate any problems of slips walking off, hopefully. And so we tend to pick up the slip and we go, okay, so I have 2-1 thus and such a person, or such and such wins in 3 games, you know, that sort of thing. We just want to verify that the results you've written down are in fact correct. And so I was mispronouncing names left and right, and I am so sorry. I am terrible at pronouncing names. So, my bad. All right, let's instead talk about the top 5 cards.
Top 5 cards.
Top 5 cards.
Top 5 cards. Ba-da-da-da-da.
This segment really needs some sort of an intro music. So, the top 5 cards of GP Shanghai 2014. Number 5, the Flying Crane Technique.
That, ladies and gentlemen, American Overrun.
Yeah, that... it's a pretty cool card. It's great artwork. It seems expensive for anything but limited, but for 6 mana, everybody's kind of got vigilance, flying, and double strike. Yeah.
It's directly asking you, do you have creatures? Good job. Even if you don't win the game this turn, you're winning the game. It's exactly like Overrun.
You're pretty much winning the game. Number 4, Wingmate Rock. Because... you know,
Dragon of Birds.
I was going to say, you know, it's better than a 3-4 for 5 with flying. 2 3-4s for 5 with flying.
They also have life gain, because why not?
Yeah.
I mean, not real life gain, but they affect life gain enough.
But I mean, when you're at that point already, why not?
It's pretty sweet. This is actually, it's a card that I'm looking forward to seeing if it gets to do anything in Standard. I don't know that it will, but I want it to.
Right.
Also of note, Once Upon a Time, like, the card that we compare this to is Broodmate Dragon, which was pretty much this, but it was a 4-4, and it cost 3 colors, and it was in good old Jund colors. But the difference was, you got a pair of 4-4s, and they were pretty much identical. In the case of this one, the token does not have that ability that makes you gain life, so if you're choosing which one to kill, all the more incentive to kill the real card.
Yeah.
They're not exactly the same.
They're close, not quite the same.
Yep.
Speaking of things to kill it with, how about your number 3 card, Murderous Cut?
That is the Delve, Destroy Target Creature.
It totally is.
It will die.
For 1 black and 4 cards out of your graveyard, kill a thing that you can target. Let me stress that you can target.
Kill all but like 3 creatures in the set. It's great.
Yeah. Number 2, Crater's Claws.
Oh, super
really?
Fireball.
Crater's Claws. Yeah.
It finishes those board stalls you kept talking about really nicely.
It sure does. It sure does.
The pool that I was registering at the PTQ, I try normally not to register them in my brain that much because I don't get to keep them, and I know that. But when you see a Crater's Claws and a Phoenix and 2 Mardu Heart Piercers, you really just want whoever gets this to just go pick up like 18 mountains and just have a party because it's great.
Look, we already built the deck. Just roll with it.
Yeah, it's just great.
Oh, and by the way, I'll also mention this. You may be tempted when registering a pool to put in a joke about how they should just go grab 18 mountains. Please resist that urge. That is technically outside assistance, and that's going to earn you match loss. So cut that out.
Also,
we all know
honesty,
it's funny.
Most of the people that are sitting there looking at a deck and saying, this person's clearly going to make this, are wrong.
Yes.
The experienced players who actually know what they're doing don't talk during this time. They're busy registering the deck.
Yes.
So,
absolutely true.
Yeah.
Absolutely true. And number 1 is not Morph, because that's not a card.
It's a real card.
It is an actual honest-to-God card. It's an enchantment. It costs 3 mana. Can you folks out there guess which enchantment it is?
Well, gee, I don't know. Is it Mardu Ascension?
No. No, it is an ascendancy, but
Jeskai
it is the
Ascension?
Obzon ascendancy.
You're getting there. You're getting there.
Yeah. So for junk, because look, junk is going to stick around. Let's be honest. If you really want to talk about deck names, Mardu might catch on, but junk is here to stay. And maybe is it Jeskai might make it?
I think Jeskai will make it everywhere but here. I think we're going to probably still call it America. Because it's easier, and the French might also call it French, but
yeah, they might. But Abzan Ascendancy. So if you don't remember that one, it is the enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. Whenever a non-token creature you control dies, put a 1/1 white spirit creature token with flying onto the battlefield. That second one is a trigger. Yes, you can miss it. No, it's not that it's a may. It's just that you can miss it. Seriously, stop arguing with me. It happened 2 turns ago. You're not getting the token.
Yeah. And for those of you who haven't actually played or played against Abzan, good job, I guess. I'm impressed. But more to the point, dumping those counters on all of your guys when it comes in is ridiculous. Because by this point, like, this is not one of the ascendancies you cast on turn 3. You want to cast this as probably the last spell of the game. I mean, you can put it out there early if you want the spirits, but for the most part, you want to have your falconers or whatever lying around so that you play this thing and all of a sudden all of your guys are bigger and can fly and maybe have lifelink, and then you've just won the game like that. It's ridiculous. So awesome.
So there you go, your top 5 cards of Grand Prix Shanghai.
Yay. Hooray.
Hey,
it's
anybody
good thing
know
that segment didn't get Shanghai'd. You love me.
Anybody know how many folks showed up for this tournament? Anyone? I'll go check. Hang on. Let's see now. What we want is
1,000?
Standings in round 4-ish of day 1 should get us there.
The tricks and that you have to do.
It looks like, sometimes they'll just print it, but no, it looks like 1,287 is the unofficial number, because they're
cool. My wild guess was actually close.
They are very, very hesitant to give us official numbers and after getting burned that one time.
1192.
You guys remember that? Yeah. So
the number here is 1192.
Right.
It is listed at the top at the day 1 coverage link.
Really?
So. 1192 players have now been reduced to just 129 for day 2. So.
Okay, but that's not the number I just read, was it?
Nope.
Confusing, isn't it?
All right, well, I'm confused. There were at least 1,000 players, but
adjusted for inflation.
Not quite 2,000. So.
Maybe some of them were out getting that delicious Chinese food that they have at their food court.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe. I can say that the Papa John's was a trap. Because they were selling just the small Papa John's pizzas and they weren't making them on site.
My wife worked for Papa John's for a couple of years. No matter where that place is at, it's a trap. Trust me.
I do not like the food. So, hey, it is probably like 4th on my pizza list.
Really?
9th, 10th. Yeah. Should be significant.
I do not hold it very highly personally.
Okay. I actually am kind of a fan of Papa John's. I wouldn't say it's the best pizza, but I prefer it over several other chains. So just out of curiosity, what is your number one there, Bill?
When it comes to getting chain pizza, I actually really enjoy, Domino's because the crust is so garlicky. So garlicky.
Oh, if we have time, I have a great Domino's related story after we're done here.
Man, I...
Maybe at the end.
I hate Domino's.
No, this is not an on-air story, I can tell.
Maybe after the end.
Okay, so let's say that you could not make it out to one of these tournaments, and you instead decided, you know what? I don't absolutely abhor the V4 client. I'm going to go and play some MTGO.
You should rethink your life choices.
What could possibly go wrong?
All right. So first of all, for people who haven't been playing Magic Online lately, which is apparently a large number of you, one of the things that they've changed about Magic Online PTQs is that instead of just fighting your way and hoping that you get in when they put it up on, like, you know, whatever night of the week they do it, usually weekend. Instead, what they do now is you get in one of the tournaments that happens during the week. They've got between Wednesday and Friday or Saturday or whatever. A whole bunch of these things, and these are smaller qualifiers, and the people who do really well in those, I don't know where exactly the cutoff point is, get to go in the actual PTQ, which takes place on the weekend. So in order to participate in this, you've already done well in one tournament that went on earlier in the week. So hey, good job. You made your way through all of that. You earned it. Here you are. You're making your way through the tournament. You know, you're playing against other people that have done really well. You're super hardcore. You make it to the top 8. This is awesome. This is all limited, so great. You're drafting your way through the top 8, picking the cards you want, and then you go, you make your deck, and you hit submit, and uh-oh. What do you mean uh-oh, Bill? Well, in Magic Online, if you fail to submit in time for the end of the submission time, it will take all of your cards and submit them, and then grab a bunch of land.
That's not a happy feeling.
It grabs a whole bunch of land to even out the 5 colors so that whatever you had is theoretically playable. Now, bearing in mind, you had 42 cards? And it gives you enough land to round it out to something like 80 cards. So like half your deck is land. And normally that's just a result of what happens if you fail to click the submit button or you disconnect or whatever. But in the case of this one, Magic Online somehow messed up and at least two or three players had that happen to them in the top eight of the PTQ.
Oh.
And you would normally think at this point that Magic Online would be like, oops, we messed up. We'll fix it. We'll do a new draft. We'll let you resubmit, whatever. No, that did not happen. So they had to play it out. And now in Magic Online, like in every other form of like competitive tournament Magic, you have to go back to your starting deck at the beginning of every round. So they would typically play out the first round. You know, if they win, great. Most likely they lose because their deck's a mess and they're playing against really good players. And then they have to build their actual deck in the sideboarding time and then play it out like that. And every round it gets rolled back to that for the first game. And someone actually managed to soldier all the way through the end of it. I don't remember exactly who it was. I don't know if they listed it or not. But regardless, so they actually made it to the finals with their pile of 80 terrible cards, and then they lost. And so the person who won the event received their, you know, Pro Tour invite and all of that stuff. But that's not where the story ends, because this is obviously a really big feel bad for everyone, both the people involved, because they'd made their way through one tournament and then they'd given up a ton of time in the second tournament, but also for the community at large, which has been very critical of the Magic Online client and its various issues, which, you know, are further compounded by the issue of can Magic Online actually handle big tournaments? And this is a big sign of no, no, it cannot. And so in an attempt to try to fix this, Mike Turian actually contacted the person who won the event. Now, there's a lot of misinformation flying around, and I don't think it's actually been directly addressed even in the official WotC release as to whether or not, you know, he had already spoken with him in advance and said, hey, can I call you? Can we talk about this? Whatever the case, the short version is that the winner was asked if they could have a do-over, and the winner said no, because I'm qualified. And that's perfectly understandable on that person's part, because they made their way through all of it, and why would they give that up? So in an attempt to fix this and all of the problems, Wizards of the Coast has put out a PTQ makeup date where they're going to allow the top eight to try again. And if this includes the person who won, they stay qualified. They're still good there. But on top of that, so they'll play through and everyone gets to keep their prizes from before, but they'll have another shot. And if that person wins again, then I believe the Pro Tour invite goes to the second person.
Yes.
But they still get their first one from winning the first time. So that's still cool. And essentially, it's a big mess, but they're doing their best to fix it. Twitter is obviously attacking this, and Reddit's attacking it, and everyone's attacking it, because it's really the cool thing to do right now to pick on Magic Online. But Wizards is doing what they can to fix it. They've completely acknowledged the problems, and they're doing what they can to take it, you know, to take the situation and resolve it well, even if they could not have resolved it in real time when it was going on. So yeah, there's an article that we're linking in the show notes if you want to read more details about it. What I just gave was a very top level summary of something that was a lot more complex. So if I made any mistakes, I also apologize. Call me out on it and I will correct it next week.
And that's all right.
Magic Online.
And that's Magic Online. Well, there's some more Magic Online news, which we may as well just bundle all together here while we're on the Magic Online topic. So, downtime updates from October 1st. We have a link here. Bill, I think you threw this in the show notes. Weekly announcements. What's new this week?
Oh, there's been all kinds of stuff that's new. So, very briefly, because again, the people who care about Magic Online probably already know or can click the link in there. But obviously, the rotations happened. So by the time you hear this, in fact, I think it's already happened today. The pre-release is over for cons, so that's out of the way now. And I believe they're closing off, or have already closed off, all of the lingering events from the Ravnica block and from the Legacy Masters set and so on and so forth. Essentially, rotation happens, so that's neat. You're running out of time if you're looking to redeem your set of Avacyn Restored, Dark Ascension, or Innistrad. Set redemptions, of course, being the thing where you pay some money and they give you real cards if you had complete sets of digital cards. So you're running out of time on that, because once the stock is gone, it is gone. So that's going to be happening. There's really just a whole list of things. There's also a list of fixes what's been going on there. In fact, there's actually another link in the show notes outlining fixes that are upcoming as well. So I won't bother you with a laundry list of this, but essentially a lot of changes have been made to both fix bugs with some card functionality and to make edits to the interface to make that a bit easier going forward. They've made it pretty clear that their goal is to get the overall client stability in line. So that has been the bulk of the focus, but they are also long enough, you'll have people warn you, hey, this thing doesn't work, or that's a problem, or there were some glitches from the new client in general, like weird states where your hand stays revealed on the other person's screen after you concede well into their next game, which is very annoying. And they fixed that, I think, and all kinds of other stuff. So there's this long list. We actually have a few lists. You can check those out. Just keep an eye out. And in general, Magic Online will continue still working. It's cool. Or at least it's as working as it's going to be working in the immediate future.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's the workingest Magic client out there.
It is the best working official Magic client you can get.
There we go.
Legally. So I don't know if you mentioned this as you were going through what parts of the laundry list you did read, but as of today, Cons and From the Vault Annihilation are now on sale.
Oh yeah, that's true. Today was the official launch. Like pre-releases are over, I think.
Yeah.
So you can actually get From the Vault Annihilation online, and you don't have to fight someone at your local store for it.
That's
so
right.
Like, go
were
around,
there people
you didn't
actually
really have to
fighting
anyway.
For this at local stores there?
Let's say yes. Like,
I mean, because at our store, they actually sold it for MSRP because it literally was not moving.
I also got it in MSRP, and it was not a battle.
Was it knowing?
Yes, it was, in fact.
Was it half a battle?
It was knowing where the store was and then getting it. I really think this is the case of the first From the Vault thing out of all of them that you could actually get pretty easily because none of the cards in it were exceptionally crazy rare, to my knowledge, or at least not in crazy rare and crazy demand.
Right.
I mean, it was no From the Vault 20, and it wasn't, let's see, the one before that was the one with the lands, right?
From the Vault Realms.
Yeah. Realms, yeah, which was, you know, a lot more impressive before I could get Urborg in the core set, so.
I still think the Maze of Ith that was in that one was just gorgeous.
Oh, no, they're still beautiful. It's a beautiful set. And then, like, another one in there, they had, like, Legends. They had a bunch of From the Vaults, but I think, aside from 20, they haven't really put out one that was super crazy, have to have it, since, what, Relics?
I believe so. That was the last time I actually went out of my way to acquire one.
Yeah. So, who knows what the future ones will hold. Personally, cards. I like it when these things are things that you can actually get. So, but putting one or two super rare things in there is kind of neat for the sake of collectors. So we'll see what they do in the future. I just hope we don't actually get, like, From the Vault terrible red enchantments, because they're going to have a lot of trouble narrowing that down to 15.
I just don't want horsemanship again. Like, is that really asking too much? Don't give me a card with horsemanship. I don't give a crap about horsemanship.
What about flanking?
No. Like, I have yet to see anybody actually excited that they got to play with horsemanship in the year 2014.
Hey, what about bands with other horsemanship?
Wolves. Oh, I want that, but I want the complete rules text for it as well. There we go. Done. Ship it in.
Oversized
ship it out.
Cards are not legal, Jack.
I'm okay with that. I can work with that.
They will be printed in microfiche to make it much harder to counterfeit, and you will have to have a magnifying device to read the cards.
And you will have to sign for it with a DNA sample of your choosing.
So, moving off of MTGO, if we could, there has been an official update to the Premier Play invitation policy. Now, these updates, I'm pretty sure, are just the implementation of the updates that they announced a couple of months back, right?
Yeah. I mean, it said at the top of the article that they reflect the recent updates that were announced back in July. I did not see any differences while skimming over it, but I didn't have both of them up next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So if this applies to you because you are, you know, pushing your way through to the Pro Tour and stuff like that, you probably want to read it anyway, but for most of us, it's sort of a neat thing that exists that we probably are not pursuing.
So let's just list a couple of highlights. The top 8 players from any individual format GP will get airfare and invitations to the Pro Tour that it feeds. That used to be just the top 4, and 5th through 8 got invitations if the GP was big enough, but now it's just any GP, make the top 8, you're golden. Let's see now, the top four teams from any team format Grand Prix. Now, we don't have a ton of those, but the top four will now be doing that. Players with 33 or more match points at the end of Swiss of a Pro Tour receive invitations and airfare to the next Pro Tour. Okay, so once you're on the train.
That's a feel-good moment. Yeah. Because there are so many instances where if you actually, like, take a look at one of the GPs that we just talked about, the difference between, like, 8th and 15th is, like, a point. And that's pretty rough. And then from there, it just gets exponentially bigger as you go down. So having it go off your match points is actually appreciated. And it also encourages people to play it out rather than just draw because.
Yeah. And, you know, that's particularly important now that these GPs are getting bigger and bigger, but they're not getting longer and longer. Right. If we were going off of strictly by place, if you have like 4,000 people in your GP, we kind of need a couple more rounds if we really want to shake this out. But there are not enough hours in the day.
Yeah.
So we're going to go by points instead. Speaking of which, if you didn't make the Pro Tour, so that 33 points at the end of Swiss at the Pro Tour doesn't apply to you. Well, how about players with 39 or more match points at the end of Swiss of a Grand Prix get invitations, not airfare, just invitations. So if you don't make the cut for the top eight, you might still get your invite.
And this might That's be easier cool. than doing a preliminary PTQ followed by a normal PTQ.
Yeah. I don't know how that's going to work, but we'll
find out. It seems kind of sad that Grand Prix, or at least objective, like looking at it from this angle, seem easier to get onto the Pro Tour from than actual things designed to feed you into it. But you're playing against a very different caliber of player if you make it through essentially the 13 wins you would need to get there. So I don't know.
Yeah.
It's going to be rewarded either way.
Yeah, although I got to say, is making 39 or more match points at a GP harder than winning a PPTQ and then winning a PTQ?
I guess it depends on where you live.
Yeah. I'm just thinking that the caliber of player that are actually going to make it into the PTQ, not the PPTQ, but the PTQ right. is actually going to be more of the creme de la creme.
It's certainly possible. I mean, it's sort of interesting because, like, in the Grand Prix, you're probably playing against people who could already be qualified for the Pro Tour.
Yeah.
So you're also playing against, like, the top tier players, whereas those people can't play in PTQs and PPTQs. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it actually plays out. Either way, if you get there, you've earned it. So.
Yeah. So those are just some highlights. There's more to this announcement, but we don't really want to dwell on it. If it applies to you, go check it out. If you wish it would apply to you, go check it out. It doesn't apply to any of us because, well, it just doesn't apply to any of us.
Sad times.
Yeah. Sad.
One day I'll be good at Magix. One day.
Sometimes.
You know, once I, you know, open enough Yu-Gi-Oh cards, I can finally be a Pokemon master. And
you know you're going to have to buy new sleeves if you start opening Yu-Gi-Oh cards, right?
Yeah, I know. I actually have...
Do you want to be the very best that Kiva never was?
Well, there's a Yu-Gi-Oh card that I actually kind of like. His name is Rescue Rabbit. And I don't know if you've seen him, but he's a little rabbit wearing a hard hat. And he's so cute. And I want to use him as a token, but I don't have any Yu-Gi-Oh! Sized sleeves.
Clues, and I love that is your justification for liking a card.
Well, have you seen him? Very well. Yeah, I'm going to try and find
him. I've seen Yu-Gi-Oh! Art, unfortunately, because at our LGS, there is some overlap between the Magic crowds, the Heroclix crowds, and the Yu-Gi crowd, because there's Yu-Gi Heroclix now.
Uh-huh.
And so the Heroclix people hang out with the Yu-Gi people who play with the Magic people sometimes. So, yeah, that's a thing. And I've been exposed to far too many Yu-Gi cards.
All right. Well, here is a link in the show notes to Rescue Rabbit. And just look at that guy. He's so cute.
Aw, he's here to rescue you with cuteness.
He totally is. And he's
naturally,
got...
there's a picture of an anime girl, number 6. Good job,
and
Google.
I was going to say, and because it's Google, sorry, there's also...
Do not scroll down.
Yeah, don't scroll down. I'm not putting that link in the show notes. You can look for Rescue Rabbit if you'd like.
At least that's not Dark Wizard Girl this time. I'll give him that.
In other news, it is the change of the seasons. We are coming into fall, and you know what that means. It is time...
Seasonal allergies!
For seasonal allergies, it's time to rake leaves. It's also time for state championships, specifically fall state championships. Wait, I need to narrow it down more. Specifically, the Star City Games Fall State Championships 2014.
Tournament edition.
Are these going to be limited or modern, or should we care?
It's Star City. They will never be limited.
Oh, okay. Yeah, never mind.
They have to sell you singles. It will never be limited.
Yeah, that's...
Bill has a point.
That's actually a pretty good point now that you mention it. I'm not... What is actually the format for these? I feel like modern, but I may be totally wrong.
It's modern, because doesn't this carry out till a little bit into next year, if I'm correct?
I don't know. I could definitely see it being standard, so that you have to spend $42 on your Sarkin.
I love that we could actually have this answer with a simple Google search, but all of us are way too lazy to do that right now.
Yeah, at least the one here in North Carolina is standard.
Ugh.
I know that.
Wager almost all of them will be.
I know that because I happen to know where the North Carolina one is happening, and that is, of course, Atomic Empire in Durham, North Carolina. It's a great shop. You should check it out. Round one begins at 10 a.m., so get there early. Get there at 9. That'll be fine. It's a nice store. There's lots of stuff to browse. Say hi to everybody who's there.
They will give you food.
You can awkwardly bug clues about what an awesome person he is, too.
Yeah, actually, you can't. I'm not going
to
be
there. Do you get that, like, slight tick when people come up to you and they're like, yeah, I like your podcast, and you don't really know what to say? I get that a lot.
No, actually, I love to hear from listeners. It's always awesome. It was very, very weird and surreal the first time someone recognized me by my voice alone.
It is weird.
But now I've grown accustomed to it, and I always like to meet fans and meet listeners, and they're all really cool people. I appreciate that someone listens, because I don't actually get any of the numbers for Monday Night Magic, so I have no idea how many of you out there are actually listening to us.
75% of the audience is probably here on the podcast tonight.
I mean, I did meet Steve at,
You actually met Steve?
Yeah, it wasn't that Steve. But yes, I met Ace.
Steve is like the reclusive unicorn in Skyrim that none of us are ever going to find.
He does sometimes take the bus, this Steve that I met. But no, actually, I met a bunch of listeners over the weekend, and I forget most of their names, but there were a lot of them. And they were all
named Steve?
No, just the one, as far as I know.
Was it Steve Geddon 2014 as we predicted?
No.
Ah, that upsets me. All right.
Anyway, the point is, fall states are happening. We have a link in the show notes if you want to find the states nearest you, which may not be in your state, which is interesting.
Yeah, that is odd.
But, you know.
I blame geography.
Yeah, geography is rough. You know, some of these states, okay, it's not so bad when you're on the East Coast, some of the little East Coast states. This is not actually commentary on state size, just they're very close together. You know, having your states is not all that tricky. But let's say you're in, Texas. There's one site for Texas. It is a single event. It's happening in Plano, which is just outside of Fort Worth. So if you're anywhere else in Texas, we're sorry.
Hey, Clues.
Yeah.
Why does California get two states?
Because they're twice the size of most states.
Would you like an honest answer?
I would like a sincere answer.
Okay, so here's a sincere answer. Because honestly, I think that California is just too big and should be two states. I actually don't know why they chose.
No. Like, I agree with you completely. Like, yeah. It's a massive thing. Like, it is actually the size of Japan and shaped about like Japan too. But it's just really like, so what we did in the show notes is we actually linked to the map so you could find your state's thing. And I'm looking at this interactive map and there's two chunks of California here. So I think that's the only state they bothered to do that with.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Wait, what is that? What is off the coast of Louisiana?
Oh, that's Puerto Rico.
Oh, Puerto Rico moved.
Yeah, so first of all, Puerto Rico moved. Second of all, Hawaii is now in Mexico.
Yeah, that was going to happen eventually anyway.
Baja California strangely looks like Alaska. And speaking of Alaska and incredibly large geographic areas, because for those who don't know, Alaska is freaking huge.
It is the biggest state.
If you're not in Anchorage, you don't have states, so...
You're probably used to missing out on a lot of things if you're in Alaska and not in Anchorage.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Hey, have we got any listeners in Alaska? If we have any listeners in Alaska, please write to us. Let us know what the magic scene up there is like, because, you know,
yeah.
Down
Do
here...
Do you guys also punch bears?
Of
like,
course.
Is that how you
actually
celebrate?
I'm really freaking curious about this.
Well, it's the only way you can survive. I mean, here down in the lower 48, there are many folks who do complain that they have to drive crazy far to get to events, particularly in, and I'm not trying to be derogatory, I'm just trying to make sure we're all on the same page, in the flyover states, you know, those ones that are kind of geometric shapes in the middle. a lot of those you have to go pretty far to find big events, because you know, most of the density of Magic tournaments happens on the East Coast or happens on the West Coast, and in between, not so much. But I gotta imagine it is way worse in Alaska, because the population density is so strange in Alaska. So I'm sure there is some poor Magic player stranded out in the middle of nowhere in Alaska.
I have a question I'm actually curious about when it comes to Alaska. Tell us if you have ever had to wait for your Magic cards to come in on a plane. Like, not just air delivery to your place. Like, if you are so stranded, you have had to have your cards airdropped. For reasons I won't get into, I've had various family members who have been in Alaska, and those towns are every bit as small as you think they are. And sometimes you got to wait for that plane to come in. So, if this has ever happened to you, I am genuinely curious and I want to hear it.
Well, you do know that Juneau, the state capital, you can't drive to it. There's no road that goes to Juneau.
Why would you want to see that movie anyways? But yeah, I completely understand. And it's crazy up there, dude. And that's, I don't know if you guys have ever seen 30 Days of Night.
That is not actually a big glowing endorsement to go to Alaska.
No. But like that aside, that's, the multiple months of darkness and everything. It's pretty freaky up there. I actually had plans to move up there at one point.
I can say that Alaska is a gorgeous state. I've been there on a number of occasions, and it's a very beautiful place, and all the folks I've met in Alaska have been very nice. If you haven't seen Alaska, you owe it to yourself to go do that. But there you go.
You might be stuck with the version 4 client if you want to go to any major tournaments anytime soon.
This is a distinct possibility. Oh, and look at that. The one in Michigan is at Bay City. Huh. I would have suspected Ann Arbor. Huh. Okay, so that is SCG States. I'm sure folks will have a good time at that. Sadly, I will not be able to attend States here in North Carolina, but there will be plenty of great folks over at Atomic Empire to help you out. So go have a good time.
Look for the people that are trying to play Magic and then between rounds catch up on what's going on at the Pro Tour.
Yes.
You'll see a lot of iPads.
You will. And I hope the network survives. We sometimes have network issues when too many people try and connect. Anyway, other things, something that is actually interesting to me that I want to bring up. There was a post today on the Tumblr of one Mr. Doug Beyer. If you guys remember the name, but Doug Beyer,
yeah,
might have heard that a time or two.
Doug Funny's brother.
So, and this is why I love having Squee on the show. So, folks have been asking about an ebook for Cons of Tarkir, and I believe we reported last week that that's just not happening. The storyline this time around is going to be handled completely online, mostly through the Uncharted Realms columns. And so, Doug Beyer has a post today where he talks about that and why that happened. I don't want to. I try my best to not be negative whenever I can, but I think this is a good move overall. I think some of the justification is somewhat, I'm not going to call it suspicious. I'm just going to call it questionable. So basically the argument is that, you know, the marketplace is changing and selling physical books wasn't really working. They were watching the numbers for people buying the books was dropping even as the number of people playing Magic was increasing. That may, I'm just putting it out there, may have had to do with some of the quality of some of the recent books. I'm not going to, you know, point at any of them in particular, but some of the early books were a lot better than some of the more recent books. Let's be honest.
Featuring Karn.
Maybe. I'm not saying, right? Just putting it out there.
It's okay. I didn't read it. I can make completely baseless statements.
Yeah. I didn't read it either because everybody told me not to.
And that's the problem.
And, you know, the ebooks, I actually enjoyed 2/3 of the ebooks.
The Secretist books?
2/3 of each of the ebooks.
Okay.
They like started strong. They never really ended well, in my opinion. But, they have decided that what they want to do instead, because let's be honest, writing a book is a lot of effort. And it takes someone a lot of time and it takes them away from other tasks they could be doing. It's difficult, right? Anybody who's tried to write a book, and you all know who you are, it's not as easy as most people think. So,
and on top of that, it's writing a book with properties you do not 100% control, which means you have to run things by other people. You have continuity to deal with. You have all of these things that if you screw up result in a giant elf.
Yeah. And you've got to coordinate with the other storyline folks who are doing things on Uncharted Realms or on cards. So they decided, you know what? Look, let's just do it all on Uncharted Realms. And I think that's great. And to that end, I don't know if you guys saw this link, and I don't think we have one in the show notes, but they've actually now have a direct link to Uncharted Realms. It has its own area on the mothership now. So that's good. I can bookmark it and actually find this stuff.
Yeah, if there's any section I'm likely to read after major news announcements, it's going to be that one.
Yeah. Definitely. And I think I might even have it in a tab someplace. If I find it, I'll try and throw a link in the show notes, but no promises on that. But anyway, I think this is a good move. Now, one thing that did happen earlier today in the announcement about this Doug Beyer post, I actually tweeted a question at Morrow. I haven't heard back yet, but I'd actually like to see what the community out there thinks about it and encourage you folks to voice your opinion on it. I would really like it if they really want to create something for those of us who really love flavor. What if when a block is done and they've got all of their short stories, their little novellas, if you will, about the flavor, what if they compiled all of those into a single ebook?
I would be happy with that. And actually, they did that with, I believe it was Shadowmoor. Mm-hmm. And that was probably the last like modern book I really enjoyed. I enjoyed the first Jace book that came out. But I think historically one of the main problems with the magic novels, outside of the obvious like arrangement issues you gentlemen mentioned, was they're really trying to tell comic book stories in a novel form. And I don't know if you guys have ever read any of the Walking Dead novels or anything like that, but it's a very poor way to translate the medium. And because let's be honest, like we can talk all we want about the planeswalkers being fully developed and being well-rounded characters, but they're basically comic book characters. They're superheroes. Okay. And I think a lot of the problem has been from, the creative department, you know, Doug Beyer, everybody, major props to them because it is very difficult writing a book. I've been trying to finish my own for 6 months now. I think maybe they were looking at how they were approaching this particular task wrong, which is ironic considering how bad the Magic the Gathering comics have been recently. But all the same, I think maybe if you took the universe of the Planeswalkers and tried to make your own universe a la, you know, DC New 52 or something like that, and you had some people who were willing and had familiarity with working in comics behind that, I think it would actually do really well. That's just me personally. I like the anthology idea though. I think that's really good because a lot of the bite-sized quality pieces you got from Uncharted Realms and things like that, they were actually much better than the books in some cases. And that's just my personal preference, but, that's what I would like to see happen.
Yeah, I think it'd be awesome because I love some of those short stories that they've done. And, you know, there are I'd like to be able to read them offline in a, you know, kind of organized format.
Yes, I would like them to be audiobooks.
Well, I think it'd be awesome if they were audiobooks.
I think that guys, audiobooks would be something that I've got a bolt. Enjoy.
I will catch you gentlemen later, okay?
All right, Jack. Thank you for joining us tonight. We'll see you later on.
No problem, guys. Catch you later.
All right.
Yeah, I think audiobooks would be something a bit more appropriate for this audience. I say that because anyone who's listening to us obviously is willing to listen to people talk for a while.
Absolutely.
And it's one of those things where I think that the pieces are short enough that they could even just record them and put them out as like a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And if they wanted to charge for it, that'd be understandable.
Hey,
because
actually,
it does take energy, but it would be pretty nice.
You know, Watsy, if you'd like somebody to make audiobooks of these, maybe, you know, then link them off of the mothership. I'm just saying, I might know some people who are into podcasting who'd be happy to do that sort of thing.
Could be awesome.
I mean, what I'm saying is I'd like to do it. I'm just putting it out there. I would love to create audiobooks of the Uncharted Realm stuff. So if you folks would like to hear that, tell Watsy.
Yeah.
If you don't want to hear that, please don't tell me. I'll have my feelings hurt.
Aw. Yeah. But yeah, it's another way to get it across that honestly, you could release them because you've already got the text. I mean, getting a professional voice actor or narrator or whatever does cost money. I mean, that would make it justified to cost, you know, sell it. But I mean, honestly, if you were to compile them all for a year, it'd be a really short recording.
Yeah.
I mean, I imagine each segment would probably be what, like 5 minutes?
Oh, yeah.
Five to 7 minutes.
Five, maybe 10 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. And so if you have those and you have, you know, say 40 of them or 30 of them or whatever by the end of a block, then you have a pretty good runtime novella, and it would be something that could stick with people a bit better. Because a lot of people remember sound better than they remember text they've read anyway. So
yeah.
And, you know, you could go jogging with the Planeswalkers. It'd be neat.
That'd be awesome. So
that's another possibility.
Yeah, but if nothing else, I do want to encourage you, just make us ebooks that are compilations. You've that's easy to do, right? You guys can self-publish those. Heck, make them PDFs. That's fine too. Just the point is put them all together in one place with an easy to find link. Speaking of links, I did track down the link to the Uncharted Realms section on the Mothership now, and I've thrown it into ye olde show notes. So.
Hooray.
All right. So some other things here in the show notes. Bill, you seem to have thrown a link in here to an unboxing of the new Dual Decks anthologies. So for those who don't remember, this is the reprinting of the first three or four. I think it's the first four Dual Decks decks in the new card frame. That's the only thing that's different. It's not new artwork or anything, but they do have an unboxing video so you can see what it looks like.
Yep, and the only reason I really included it in here is because when you actually look at it, like, you don't even have to watch the video. If you look at the still that it just throws up on YouTube, you get a sense of they've made this nice box that fits eight deck boxes and two spin-down D20s, and each of the deck boxes is large enough to have a sleeved deck inside of it.
Oh my god, you're kidding me. They've actually unlocked the technology of a cardboard box that's the correct size to take sleeved cards?
Yes.
Wow.
I couldn't immediately tell that it was big enough when I looked at this earlier today, but someone confirmed when asking online, I think it was on Twitter, yes, they've said that they will fit.
Can we get that in a fat pack box?
I don't know.
I hope so.
I mean, I'm hoping that they just make this the new template going forward, but if you check it out, they've got each of the fit in these little boxes with sleeves, and it's all in one convenient package that you can carry around. I mean, theoretically, you could just make this your way of carrying eight normal decks as well. The little spots in there for putting two spin downs is kind of neat for a dual concept. And overall, I remember us giving them some crap about the fact that it was $20 more than what they all originally MSRP'd for. And I can see that now. This feels kind of like the neatness of the holiday box when you look at the fact that it's $4 more than the cost of the packs. So in the case of this one, it's a little bit more, but you're getting a nice product.
Yeah, it looks awesome. So
that's cool.
Go.
I mean, it's one of those things where if I didn't already own these things, I would probably get it just because it looks nice. And there is admittedly a benefit to just carrying something like this around to your friends going, hey, I've got eight decks right here. They're all relatively balanced. We're not going to let the divine one fight the demonic one. Otherwise, let's just go to town. And from there, see what happens. And that seems like a pretty good thing, especially if you're looking to get someone that, you know, is a Magic player who you don't know what to get them, but you want them to have something worth $100 instead of something worth $20. It might be a viable gift. It's neat. They're not going to have too many of these things in each store based on the numbers we saw a little bit ago. So if it interests you, go for it.
Yeah, definitely cool. All right. So I kind of want to save this next bit to the end. Are you okay with that?
That's fine.
Okay. So other things in our show notes, bear in mind that our show notes are a collaborative effort, which is why sometimes we have no idea where things came from or why they came from. But speaking of podcasts, if those of you like podcasts, like, for instance, Morrow's Drive to Work podcast, apparently in episode number 161, he explains why Mirrodin, but for enchantments, is difficult and highly unlikely. So we, of course, just came off of an enchantment block. Enchantments are tricky. So in his podcast, he talks about that. There is a companion article. This is something that Morrow does. For those who don't listen to his Drive to Work podcast, they're actually really interesting. He gives you a nice look behind the scenes at how things are done. His podcasts are... they're kind of like reality television, sort of. They're not a high production thing. It's literally he gets in his car with his iPhone on record. And so sometimes the audio quality is good. No, okay, let me rephrase that. Sometimes the audio quality is terrible, and sometimes it's okay.
On a scale from top 8 magic to I can't actually tell what they're saying, where is it?
Depends on the week. I'll be honest, there are times when I can't even listen to it.
Okay.
And this is not a commentary on the quality of the content. The content is always good. I actually enjoy hearing Mark Rosewater talk about things because he is very, very passionate about what he does. Even though his goal is to kill magic, we all know that. And he's terrible at that. He's great at making magic actually happen. So it's always really interesting to listen to when I can actually hear what's going on. He's driving. It's literally him driving to work. And so depending on where he set the phone down that particular day, sounds not great, particularly if he has a guest. Those are the worst ones
a carpool guest?
Yeah, he'll sometimes have a carpool guest.
Huh.
And what's so painful about it is the guests that he gets are other interesting people from WotC who have interesting things to say. But now he has to put the phone somewhere where the microphone can pick both of them up, and apparently there's nowhere in his car that can happen.
Like the center console. No, that's terrible.
Yeah. So.
But tell me this: does he swear at other drivers and stuff?
No. I don't think I've ever heard him swear. He has gotten caught in traffic. He has had to detour around things, and so you'll get a really long episode. But his drive to work is almost exactly half an hour under normal traffic conditions. And so they're usually about 30 minutes long. Now, that does mean that some weeks it carries over into the next week. But he records these things way, way ahead of time. So there's always a constant stream of these. Anyway, again, this one has a companion article. And like I said, that is something that he does. Sometimes he'll write an article and then do a podcast. Sometimes he'll do a podcast and then an article. But the point is, you'll often have a little extra content on one or the other. That's this week's Making Magic, is all about that. It's entitled Volume Control.
Yeah, it's specifically, in the case of this one, it's not quite that topic. I think it's related because he went over it, but. This one talks a little bit more about, so you have some mechanics and you want to put them in a set, but how many do you put in? And
all of them.
Well, it's a matter of like how many cards for each mechanic. I mean, do you spread them 100% evenly? How many cards that don't use that do you put in there? It's kind of neat from that perspective. It's a good read if you're into game design, as most of his articles are. The main thing that I thought was neat about this one, and the one little thing I would bother you with right now, is just the factoid that if you open a pack of Cons of Tarkir, you have just under just under even odds that you're going to get, two gold cards. Like the actual number, the percentage of the pack is just under two cards. Whereas if you were to go back to Return to Ravnica, the odds of getting a gold card were about 3.5 of the cards. So sometimes you get three, an equal amount of the time you get four. So if you actually look at it, despite the fact that this is the three color set, you're getting less than half as many gold cards as you were getting back in Ravnica. So if you open those random packs and you're like, why do I only have the one gold card? That seems weird. It's not as weird as you think. I thought that was interesting because you would think that the set that has to cover three colors would have a lot more, but the actual practical needs of the set meant that you just can't do that. Now, mind you, if you go back in time far enough with the Wayback Machine, there was the wonders of Alara Reborn, which was all gold all the time, and that was a special adventure in and of itself. But overall, it's an interesting article to check out if you're into any of that stuff. If you only care about the final product of the game and you don't care about what goes into it, this is a very easy one to skip to. Though you should pull it up anyway and scroll all the way down and look at the picture of the giant turtle, because it still makes me happy.
Yeah, the dirtle turtle.
Oh, he got stolen.
Oh, yeah. Hey, that's another interesting one that did come up quite a few times. The I act of treason your dirtle turtle and I attack with it. Where does it go? Well,
yeah,
it's mine now.
It is a treasonous turtle.
Yeah, it is a treasonous turtle. Haha, take that. Anyway, that was a bit of a digression on Morrow's podcasts, but they're good. When the audio's good. And that's the only thing I will say tomorrow about that. Look, I understand that you're going for that, you know, real authentic, you're kind of in the car with you experience, but man, if you could just get a mic, because I'm sure they make them that you can plug into like the, either the like headphone jack microphone combo jack thing, or.
I think there's a little concern that after a certain point of making his car optimized for this, he's actually breaking laws.
Well, I'm just saying just a slightly better mic is all I'm saying.
Mm.
Right. Anyway, I'm sure the day will come when Morrow gets involved in a fender bender. It hasn't happened yet, thankfully, knock on wood, but,
And it seems like he could just get a Bluetooth headset mic.
Yeah, for instance.
I don't know what the laws in Washington State are, but it could be an option.
Yeah, we don't want Morrow to break the law. We just want him to give us more goblins. And we also want them to stop making blue cards that allow for card draw. What we want is no more blue commons that make it into being legacy staples. Can we cut that out for a while? Like, seriously? treasure crews, really?
But so many cards drawn, Clues.
I know.
You get three. You know what else gives you a three card draw for a blue? Cards that can't be printed ever again.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So speaking of printing things again, and speaking of an earlier mentioned Doug Beyer, call back to an earlier part of the show.
Continuity.
That's right. Someone asked on the Tumblr of one Mr. Doug Beyer, post-cons are orcs back in rotation as a red-black characteristic race. Please say yes. And Mr. Doug Beyer says, orcs are on the table going forward. It's a sturdy table.
You'll note that he didn't say yes.
He didn't say yes. Although he does have some pretty good hashtags. I don't know
how
you feel about that, but
one of them is orcs's.
One of them is orcs's. It is good. Anyway, so there you go. That is the news of the week that was.
Hooray.
Let's say, but we have important news, an important event. Some things happened to a member of this very podcast who's still here tonight.
That narrows it down,
and it wasn't me. We already talked about the things there is one thing that I did this weekend that I do want to mention if we have time, but let's talk about Bill's weekend. Bill, what did you do this weekend?
I met up with the Manipool Dorks, and we went to the sealed PTQ that we were talking about.
And where was that at?
That was at Lucky's Card Shop in Greensboro, North Carolina.
All right, fantastic. I always like to plug local shops whenever I can, so go on.
And so we showed up. I fought my way there through traffic that I didn't expect on Saturday morning, but I guess people really like driving out to the mountains to look at the trees. Anyway, so get there. It's sealed. Good times. We go through the whole deck registration thing, and then through a series of convoluted events, I ended up in the top eight.
Nice. What was the turnout like, by the way?
The total?
Yeah.
I will ask Planeswalker points, but I think it was in the 70s.
Oh, well, that's all I was really trying to get a handle on. We're talking like 30 people or 100 people. We're talking in the upper end of 100, so sure.
Something in that neighborhood. Planeswalker points is slow, as is widely known.
Yes.
Because it's like it's made of flash or something. Expanding little thing, 77 players.
Nice.
So we had 77 players, and it was pretty neat because I put together a teamer deck, and that was kind of weird because teamer's the one that I haven't played with.
Did it have Bear Punch in it?
It did.
Yes.
It was actually pretty interesting as an experience because like I said earlier, the pack that I opened and registered was so very much a manner of red that it was the one that I really secretly wanted. But that wasn't what I got. That said, the card that follows me around at all times opened its way up for me again, and it was the Hooded Hydra.
Oh, yeah.
It was not the most important card in my deck at all.
Really?
But the Hooded Hydra showed up, and that was neat. Really, most of my cards spread out over the colors, but the noteworthy like MVP of the deck was definitely the Saku Mauler, which you are not dealing with ever. That is the 6/6 Trample Hexproof for 4, a green, and a blue. Or morphing it for 3, a green and a blue. And it never loses a game when it resolves. It got to the point where I stopped morphing it because that's the only way it will ever die. I just waited and cast it for 6. And a 6/6 with trample and hexproof when your deck is full of fight effects is just unstoppable. I did have the Savage Punch, and there was some Savage Punching going on. Other noteworthy cards that made their way into the pool. I made this wonderful mistake where I had an Alpine Grizzly in my hand in one game, and I thought it was Awaken the Bear. Mm. And because like all these things have bears on them. And so I thought it was a combat trick, and so I didn't play it on turn 3 when I didn't have a morph creature either. So I just completely whiffed my turn 3.
Nice.
Felt really dumb. But overall, I had a lot of interesting adventures there. I won't waste too much time on it, but I will say that one of the keys for getting through the main Swiss event was Teamer Charm, simply because its third ability says that creatures with power 3 or less can't block this turn, and it gets rid of that massive board stall problem you kept talking about.
Yeah, you want to have a plan for the massive board stall problem, because it's going to happen.
And it was pretty great, because my opponent was sitting pretty comfortably on, like, 21 life. And we were going to turns, and on turn 3 of turns, or turn two of turns, I guess, whatever it was, his first turn in turns. He'd have one more turn left to attack. He tapped down his Abzan guys so that they'd be big enough for the final attack. And that meant that all of his guys that were big enough to block were now tapped. And so I got to untap and Teemer Charm to make all of my guys unblockable and just swing in and get him for like 2+ to Xaxes.
Nice.
And out of nowhere, he is just dead.
Wreckface.
It was pretty amazing. That said, like I said, my third round opponent, like if you were to look at things from the actual games, he should have won. But because of the aforementioned thing with Morph, he ended up losing. And that was unfortunate. But that was the only round I would have lost. I was 5-0. I made it through 5 rounds of it. And that meant I could just draw for the last 2 to get into top 8. So I did that. Which was pretty nice, honestly, because it was getting a break and it meant I got to eat. So then we go to top 8 and we're drafting. And this is a, you know, it's a very called draft. I've never been in one of those before. I knew how it worked, but it's different when you're there because suddenly time is something you're very conscious of. And at my table, apparently 3, possibly 4 of the people there all wanted to be Mardu. And that's pretty awkward for them.
Yes, yes it is.
My first pick was the 5 mana burn spell, the one that has the double red in the cost that does 4 or a little bit more of your ferocious, I think.
Right.
And
Rain of Arrows?
Yes, Rain of Arrows.
Yeah.
So that was my first pick because I also like the Mardu plan just because it's my playstyle.
By the way, a quick note to everyone, Rain of Arrows is a sorcery. Be careful with that.
Remember that. Yeah, that's important. And so I started with that and my second pick was Ride Down because Ride Down is great in that board state that we were talking about before where everything stalls. And then here I am with my Borosi deck and I get past a really solid blue card and no solid Mardu card. So I grab a blue card and then I grab another blue card. And then I realize very quickly that based on the dual lands and tri lands even that I'm seeing, no one is in Jeskai, but everyone's fighting over Mardu. So the red white is pretty much going to be a vicious battle, but all of the red blue cards and the white blue cards are wide open. And so I managed to just shift gears into Jeskai, and I was very much rewarded for it because I got past a number of really important cards in Pack 2 from the like string of Mardu people. Like I was past a Narset Enlightened Master.
Seems good.
Pretty good. I was past a Charm, which was nice.
Mm-hmm.
And then most importantly, I was past a Mantis Rider. And getting a Mantis Rider past you is one of the best feelings in the world.
Remind me, which one's Mantis Rider? He is the
3/3 flying vigilant taste for 3.
That guy. Yeah, he's kind of good.
Kind of amazing. And again, it gets around those annoying board stalls. So I'm being passed all of these cards that are just candy for it. I'm loading up on combat tricks. I'm loading up on all of these on-color spells. Like I think in my entire pool, I only had like 4 off-color spells total. Mm-hmm. I'm getting the artifacts to tap for my mana. I managed to load up on, dual lands for my colors. Cause essentially the red white ones were not happening with the Mardu fights, but I had 2 copies of the, red blue one and 2 copies of the white or the white blue one. And so I'm sitting here looking at my deck during registration and it looks almost like a constructed deck that's allowed to be 40 cards. It was really good. The only drawback that it had at all was that I didn't have access to the really cheap red and white creatures because they were fighting for those and the little blue creatures kind of suck.
Mm-hmm.
So I managed to pick up the white one that, that gets, lifelink and prowess together.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good. And I got like the red one that attacks every turn and a few other like 2 drops. And then I grabbed some of the big blue creature, the glacial something that morphs essentially. I'm running it as a morph creature that will occasionally be big. But essentially, I needed to load up on low drop creatures to actually make the deck work, because the way a Jeskai deck works is you land a creature or 2, and then you just stop your opponent from playing Magic in any way possible. You bounce their creatures, you tap them down, draw cards, you just keep the card draw engine running. And if you don't have the Ascendancy that's getting all the attention in Modern and all the other formats, then you actually have to do this the hard way, which is having all these spells in your deck. So I made the conscious call to only run 12 creatures and 11 spells, because the only way a Jeskai deck can work, at least from the cards that I had access to. And so I went with that, and for the first round of the top 8, it worked. It worked really, really well. It was completely crippling to my opponent, destruction from above. It was great.
Huzzah! Squee firing on all cylinders.
And it was amazing. And so then I get to the quarterfinals, and then my deck just stopped.
Oh.
It was admittedly, like, I don't want to just blame the entire thing on Mana Screw, because that was part of it. It was certainly a part of it, but honestly, if my deck were firing all the way, I don't know if it would have won, because it was the worst possible matchup for me, which is the very wide, very low curve, Mardu deck that makes lots of tokens. My ability to tap things down and bounce things when they're producing multiple creatures a turn does not work. And the whole idea is that if you go up against something like a Temur deck that can land one guy a turn, if you bounce it or you tap it or whatever, you're still getting through for damage. But if their turn one is to play the creature that whenever it outlasts, it gets another creature,
mm-hmm.
you know, they keep putting in tokens, and their turn three play is to play the guy who comes out with a turn with like another 1/1 token when if you attacked with raid, and it's just like all tokens all the time. I can't push my way through that. So the mana was bad for me. Like, even with all my dual lands and everything, I could not stick blue, which right. I desperately needed for the deck to work. So it petered out there. But it felt really good to, between rounds, look on my phone and see people on Twitter cheering me on and all that kind of stuff. That was really nice. I didn't have much time to reply, but I just wanted to let everyone know that, yes, I saw the messages, and it was a lot of fun. And it's actually a weird kind of high that you get, because when you're playing it, it's all tension and you're focusing on every little detail. But when you're between rounds and you realize, wow, I'm 5-0, I'm going to make it to the top 8, or wow, I'm like 4 games away from the Pro Tour and stuff like that, it's a completely different experience. Overall, it was a lot of fun. I think Chewy got sick of me talking about how lucky that I felt for most of the day, because honestly, my deck was good in the sealed, but it wasn't as good as a lot of the other decks that I played against. I played against better decks. I played against some people that I thought were better players. But overall, I think that I was playing my A game and it came together. And with just the right amount of luck and the right amount of timing, you can push through things like that. This is also a very early spot in the format where people haven't quite figured out how to build their mana bases yet.
Mm-hmm.
And once in a while, you do get the free wins. You don't get a lot of them, but you'll get them. Like, nearly every round I played, we went to 3 games. It wasn't like I got to steamroll anybody. It pretty much always took most of the time in the round and was very mentally stressing, but it was fun. It's one of those things where I didn't actually know where the Pro Tour was at. Someone told me near the end that it's in DC. I'm like, yay, I get a plane ride for 20 minutes if I win. But, you know, it's the thought that counts.
Yeah.
And getting in obviously would be different entirely. I'm actually considering going to the DC Pro Tour anyway, because when else am I going to go to a Pro Tour now that I know that it's apparently open to the public again?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't really know how that is. It apparently is.
It's like, I remember the announcement when they said it wasn't open to the public anymore. And I don't remember when saying that it is again, but I got the impression from a number of sources that, yeah, you can totally show up. And so now I'm just confused. But if it is open to the public, I might make the trip, just because I don't know when I'm going to get another chance to go to a Pro Tour.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like a lot of fun. So that would be cool. But it also means that when you get to third place, because my final placement was third, you sort of get that itch where you're like, man, this actually can just happen, and you want to try again, but I'm not going to be able to go to any more sealed PTQs in this format unless I play online. So I don't know. I might try getting in a Magic Online one sometime soon. Like, I do really enjoy the sealed format. It's a lot of fun. It's not as bomb swingy as people seem to think it is, because honestly, it seems to be a lot more a matter of building a consistent deck than a really powerful swingy deck, because all the cards are powerful. Like, no one's going to have a deck that's terrible unless the mana base is bad. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot more tight play. A lot of it's also just having the guts to deal with morph creatures. Part of why my deck was stressful is because all of the removal that I had was fight-based. I had none of the actual burn in my red.
Yeah.
And so when all your removal is fight-based and you're always fighting these things and you don't know what they are, it's pretty stressful. You have to choose wisely, because I was so afraid every single time that they were going to reveal a black card and flip over the Death Touch thing, and then I would lose something big and important. And it never happened, but it was a terrifying thought. Overall, though, I recommend it. Go to any sealed event that you can, honestly. You don't have to deal with the meta knowledge. You don't have to deal with most of the rest of it. And and you might, you know, get the good pool and you might be able to run with it, or you might just have a lot of fun playing against other people. I do have a neat top 8 playmat now.
Sweet.
Cool. And they actually give you something in Planeswalker points when you top 8 an event. So, you know, you get those little emblem things. They actually give you one of those for that. So now if you see me on a forum somewhere where that's in my signature, I don't even know who this character is, but there's a tiny little picture saying that I'm a PTQ top 8 person. So that's pretty cool too.
Nice.
So yeah, it was a lot of fun. I definitely recommend it. I know that this is the last time, like this season, I think is the last time you can actually just win a PTQ and immediately go to a Pro Tour. I think starting in January, February, whenever the next season is, you're going to have to go do the pre-PTQs and the PTQs and all of that stuff. So if you're looking for that chance to just get in on one good tournament, this is your time to do it.
Yeah, so a couple of quick notes that I want to add as let's say footnotes to this. So the first one is a specific note about this format, and it's going to be important for the next like year and a half anyway, since we'll be, you know, dealing with Morph for a while.
Sure.
One note about Morph, because this question did come up more than once over the weekend. Let's say that I am playing against Squee, and Squee attacks, and I block with one of my Morph dudes. And then I ask Squee if he has any effects before damage. So Squee is now passing priority to me at the end of declare blockers. If I then unmorph my guys, you know, so I pay their cost and I flip them over, there are people who will think that, okay, now we go immediately to damage and Squee doesn't get priority back because he's already passed priority and Morph doesn't use the stack. Therefore, we're just going to go straight to damage. No, it does not work that way.
Nope.
Okay, the key is both players have to pass priority on an empty stack without taking any actions.
Yes.
And unmorphing, flipping them over, that is an action. It doesn't use the stack, but it is still an action. Squee will get priority back and still gets a chance to burn my dudes to death before combat damage happens.
Mind you, they are probably bigger now.
They're probably bigger now, and we can't kill them. But, you know, just in case, there is time. So I just want to mention that because that is definitely a point of confusion for folks who haven't played with Morph in a while.
This is highly relevant if you're running spells like Murderous Cut.
Yes.
Where you can outright kill a thing at instant speed because you don't have to hurry or you don't have to hope that they don't have it. And then you have no chance once it's flipped over. I mean, if they flip over and it's a big, you know, 6-7 woolly Loxodon, you can totally kill it. And you probably want to, because those things are terrifying.
Yes. Yes, they are.
One other thing, like, on those lines, one of my opponents, at one point, they used a kill spell on one of my Morph creatures. And so I, you know, I'm like, okay, no response, and it dies. And they're like, yeah. So then I reach over, and I flip it over to reveal it and put it away. And then as I'm flipping the card over, they go, wait, can I take that back? And not
nope.
only can they not take that back normally, but they especially can't take that back after they've seen what it was.
Yeah.
So this seems obvious, but I mean, it'll come up. You have to hold people to it. You can't try, like, I mean, if you're playing in like F&M or something really casual, you should at least make it clear that they shouldn't do that. But if you're playing in a competitive event, you have to hold them to it or you are also breaking the rules.
Yeah, absolutely. And while we're on that subject, that led to actually one of my next comments. If you're practicing for a competitive level event, you're going to have this temptation to play like you always do when you're playing with your friends. Fight that temptation. Do not do it. You have to practice as if you're actually playing competitive level events. There's no takesies backsies. There's no mulliganing in and saying, oh, I'll just go back up to 7. This is what 6 would be, but now I'll go back up to 7. No, don't do that. You have to get used to doing things like they're going to be done at the tournament. So hold yourself to it. Make sure that you pay for your mistakes because that's what's going to happen in real life. And if you're going,
how you learn.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're going to a limited one, there are a couple of specific skills I think people should practice. One is learning how to fill out a limited deck red sheet because it doesn't seem that complicated, but people screw it up all the time.
Pretty handily.
Just get used to it. Don't forget to register your basic lands. My God, there are so many game losses just for that. But make sure you do
that. Yeah, I have never been to a sealed event where they did not give out game losses at the beginning of round 2 because of deck reg errors.
Yeah, and these days, as the tournaments have gotten bigger and bigger, we just don't have time to count all of the lists by round 2. So the official policy is we're going to count the lists. We will hand out your game loss when we notice. So whenever we get around to your list, and it may be the feel bad, if it's now round 6 and you're on your... your win to stay alive, and we come to your table and we go, hey, guess what? Yeah, you're starting this match with a game loss because you don't know how to add to 40.
Yeah.
And yeah, it feels horrible, but that's also totally the way it is. So there you go. And lastly, something that Squee mentioned that I think is an important skill that most people are not used to, practice a called draft. A called draft is a very different beast from drafting at your FNM. The time pressure is weird. Very, very weird. And if you're not used
to it, it's weird.
Well, it both speeds up and slows down. When you've got a card that you know what you're doing, it's like it takes forever. But when you're really debating, it's like, but Judge, you told me I had 20 seconds and now I have to make a pick? Well, yeah, it's actually been 20 seconds, so.
Oh, you might find this entertaining. So one of the things that you have to do in a called draft, and you should be doing this all the time anyway, is when you take cards, you put them in a stack face down in front of you.
Right.
A single stack.
Single pile.
A single pile. And one of the people at our table was putting things down in multiple piles, so it was kind of blatantly obvious to everyone else around that he was keeping track of how many cards he had in each color or at each mana cost or something. It was really obvious that he was trying to keep them separate for some reason. And the judge is like, you can't do that. And he's like, what do you mean? And he's like, well, you have to put them in a single stack. And he's like, okay. So then he starts to put them in a stack insofar as they were overlapping, but they were still blatantly separated off in different directions. And he's like, no, really, you can't do that. Yeah. And he's like, look, I know it's against the rules, but I want to see how far I can get within the rules. And he's like, no, you're going to put them in a proper stack.
Yeah.
And it's like, do not get on the judge's bad side. It's not helping you, and it's annoying everyone else, and you're not going to get this. So.
And it's probably not going to help, so maybe you should cut that out.
You should use the clever brain power or whatever that you're using to try to find ways to monkey this to actually pay attention to your draft, because you do not have the time for that.
Yeah.
It's special. You also cannot look at your cards between picks.
Yeah, and this is something that I do at my FNMs. I try and hold people to this, that they should make a single pile and that they can't look at them except between packs to get them used to this.
And it's better for you. Like, a lot of the times what you'll find is people who spend more time playing Magic Online do not actually develop the skill of remembering what they've already picked. It seems obvious, but in practice, when you're looking at so many cards, you can forget some of your earlier picks, or at least you'll forget the basics things like how many creatures have I got. And if you don't get to see them until the end of a pack and you assumed that you have more creatures than you do, you might go into pack three realizing that you have to force creatures over good cards just to have creatures in your deck. And if you're used to playing Magic Online where you can sort by color, sort by type, sort by whatever, then you're not going to be ready for that. So you should practice that as well. There's a whole lot of stuff that goes into it that you wouldn't think would come up, but if you ever end up there, it's come up and you don't want to be trying to figure out how to handle all this stuff while your opponents are crafting really powerful decks.
Yeah, and what I'm going to encourage people to do is, if they want to try this out, encourage your local game shop to do a called draft sometime. I mean, even if you don't run the rest of it at competitive, just getting the experience of doing that will give you a huge leg up when you make day two.
Yeah.
So anyway, that is my high horse on tips for that, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway, nice work this weekend, making it to top four. Nice job.
Yeah, that was pretty neat. It's one of those things where you get close enough that you start getting that itch where you want to just play more.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very fortunate, probably, that I'm not going to be able to make it any more in-person ones unless I'm willing to drive to another state. I think there's going to be one that's going to be in Charlotte or something, but it's a weekend that I am out of state, so that's not happening.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely go check them out. The sealed season is the best time to do this stuff. You don't have to do metagame analysis. You don't have to dump hundreds of dollars into a deck in advance. You just show up and you get cards. And even if you do badly, you walk away with six packs worth of cards. So
yeah,
that's cool. And if you can, I recommend bringing some tokens of your own just to keep things coherent.
Mm-hmm.
You've probably got them lying all over the place now. Like, you don't need all of them. You probably don't need to find the ones that are specific to mythics or emblems or any of that stuff. But bring some soldiers, bring some goblins, you know.
Or at the very least, bring something that you'd like to use as tokens that you have several of. So I've seen people use like Pro Tour cards or tokens they get from Channel Fireball or SCG.
Yeah.
You know, just something that you can use that is not just a sleeve, right?
Right. And one other thing, do not grab tokens that are blatantly a thing and say that there's something else because they're handy One of my opponents was grabbing goblin tokens and trying to use them as warriors. And that's a problem.
Yeah.
In this format specifically, whether or not something is a warrior matters. And its color doesn't matter as much. But whether or not it is a warrior completely matters right now. And that's going to be one of those things where if someone walks by, like a judge walks by or something, and they see that, and, you know, it looks like a game mistake or something, or, you know, if you and your opponent are not on the same page, you're going to create problems, and it's going to result in awkward calls and wasting everyone's time and backtracking, and just don't do that. Flip it over and use the other side of it if you have to.
Yeah, there's enough going on. There's no reason to confuse things.
So.
All right, so I want to mention one other cool thing I did over the weekend that I'm sure others have done and some people will not care, but I'm going to mention it anyway. So we were down in Orlando, and Sunday night after the event was over, myself and some judge friends decided to go out to dinner, and we went to a place called Fogo de Chao. I don't know if you've ever heard of this place. It is a Brazilian steakhouse.
That sounds delicious.
There are several different Brazilian steakhouses around. This is just one of them. It was amazing. And I made some poor life choices. I ate way too much. The way it works, and it's very expensive, don't get me wrong. This is not a cheap meal. This is not like McDonald's, but you go in there and you pay them a god awful amount of money. But, we had these little like coasters next to our plates, and
You got the meat faucet.
One side was red and one side was green. And if you flipped it over to green, there are guys who are walking around from the kitchen. They'll come out of the kitchen and they'll kind of walk around the dining room and go back into the kitchen and they'll come back out again. And they're carrying swords, like honest to God swords with meat on them.
Yes.
And it's various different cuts and various different doneness. And they will come by, and if your little thing is flipped to green, they will stop and they'll say, I've got thus and such. You know, like I've got the filet, or there was a bacon wrapped filet that was actually really good, and they'll just cut off a hunk for you and put it right on your plate, and then they'll wander off, and then there's another guy like right behind him with a different cut of meat, and they'll give you that.
Until you flip over that little mat, they're gonna keep doing this.
They will keep coming until you tell them to stop. And if you want to just pause them, just flip it over to red, eat for a little while, flip it back over to green, and bam, they're right there again. And they had a giant salad bar. I started with a salad, had a giant salad bar, and then they had some side dishes that they brought us, but it was a crazy amount of food. And I ate way too much of it, and then at the urging of one of the other folks who was there with us, I didn't really save room for dessert, but I had dessert anyway.
Yep.
That may have been the real critical error. I mean, it was amazing. It was a cheesecake, and it was one of the best pieces of cheesecake I've ever had, and I did finish it, but I really should not have.
Yeah, I live across the street from Brasa.
Oh yeah,
which is a Brazilian steakhouse. I have only eaten there twice ever. I ate there once when I got my current job as celebration with a bunch of friends, and again when one of my friends left my previous job to get a new job, and it was sort of became our tradition thing. And it's one of those things where my friends adequately called it the meat faucet.
Yeah.
As long as the meat faucet is turned to on, meat will continue to flow until you turn it off.
That is correct.
It's good meat. It's not bad meat. And so you end up like, how many garlic steaks did I have? I don't know. I'm at the part where so much meat has ruined brain. No think now. Meat.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where, yeah, you spend a lot of money up front, and you're probably not actually getting your money's worth per calorie, but you are so happy.
And it's.
And then you are so miserable.
Yes. Yeah. It's very well done. It's very well prepared. It's well presented. It's an interesting atmosphere. If you've never done it, you probably owe it to yourself once. This is assuming you eat meat. If you don't, look, this whole conversation
is
useless to you. You don't need to tell us it's not for you. We understand. But if you do like beef, wow.
Did they have non-beef options too?
They had some chicken and they had some seafood.
Yeah. The last time I went to Brasa, you sort of picked your level of how much you wanted. But usually if you went for the higher level ones, you could get like the shrimp and the beef and the chicken and the pork and the other animals that are all delicious all the way across, the ribs, everything.
And they had some lamb. I'm not a fan of lamb, but they had that.
It's like they march into Noah's Ark with the swords.
Yeah.
And they just skewer anything, and then they cook it perfectly and bring it to you. And then if you flip the rock over, or the, you know, the coaster or whatever, you can eat that animal.
Yeah.
Glorious.
Anyway,
so if
this
you're
was
listening
my...
to this at lunch, you are super hungry now, and we apologize. Go get some food.
This was my first FOGO experience, and it was really good. I don't know that I would do it every time I go to a Magic tournament because I would die.
You would die.
I am an old man, but it was interesting.
Yeah, I picked up a Fitbit a few weeks ago, so now I'm very conscious of how many calories I burn.
Yeah.
And how many calories are in everything that I eat. And as such, the idea of just going like crazy on cow again is really intimidating because now I actually am conscious of what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I can properly do that unless something really important and life changing happens.
Right.
I mean, like if I actually made the Pro Tour or something, then I would probably have eaten something better than celebratory McDonald's. But even then, it would be a matter of, I don't know. I would have to be getting married or something to go for that at this point. Oh, infinite cow.
Yeah, infinite cow. That's right. So that was my weekend. That's all I've got. I got nothing else. And we're actually at a reasonable length right now. We're at like
so let's just
under 2 hours. So hey, let's wrap this thing up.
All right.
Chewy couldn't be here. Of course, Chewy is under the weather. We wish him well. He will get well soon and rejoin us at another episode of Monday Night Magic because we can't get enough of these. If you want to contact him, you can, of course, just Manipool, themanipool.com, Chewy at the Manipool, Dorks at the Manipool. I think at the Manipool on the Twitters. Just type in the Manipool.
If you want to watch his YouTube feed, it's the Manipool Tube because they snuck a pun in there. And all of the stuff is available in the show notes as well. I mean, I'm sure it'll get copy pasted like always.
Yeah.
You can find Chewy if you're looking for Chewy. If you're looking for Jack, it's jack@mtgcast.com. There's a Tumblr we're not going to tell you because we're your friends.
Yeah, that's
right.
And if you want to find it, you're wrong. Don't go looking.
Yeah, don't do that.
Cut that out. How about you, Bill? Any contact info?
Yeah, if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's Squee Goblin Nabob, no iron goblin. I am fully aware that the actual pronunciation of the word is Nabob, but that takes longer to say, and I've just gotten used to saying Nabob, so I'm going to probably keep doing that. It also sounds more like kebab, which I think is more appropriate. And so, like, that's the easiest way to find me there. And that's pretty much the best way to contact me in general. Like, I will post or wander through the Card Shark forum where the Manipool is based as well. But at this point, I think I've spent more time on Twitter than anything else. So message me there if you're looking for me.
Yeah, that's probably fair. As for myself, I am, of course, Clues, although I am not at Clues on Twitter. Someone over in, I think, Japan has that, and they don't post, but they follow a few people, so I keep waiting for it to get free, but it doesn't. And, you know, that's cool. I don't want to harass the person. I'm sure they have their own reasons for having at Clues. But you can find me at Locklouze, which is spelled just like it is in the show notes, and the actual way to pronounce my last name. Most people think it's Lecluse when they see it because I go by Clues, but I only use the middle syllable. It's way more information than you wanted to know, but I'm operating on not a lot of sleep right now, so I'm kind of working stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
So that's the best way to contact me. I'm always happy to answer rules questions, magic questions, science questions, whatever you'd like to throw on there. That's just fine. Questions about bow ties. We can talk about those. You can find me most of the time over at Atomic Empire in Durham, North Carolina, which is a great shop, and you should check it out. Although, sadly, I will not be there this weekend. My apologies. I have a personal commitment that will keep me away from magic for the weekend. Other than that, you can find me at Eternal Weekend if you're into Legacy or Vintage. That's right, Sanctioned Vintage up in Philly, coming soon in a few weeks, as well as GP New Jersey, because, hey, if you're not going to GP New Jersey, you're probably doing it wrong.
That sounds like me.
This has been episode...
One other note before you do that. You probably want to tune in to us next week because after this big Pro Tour happens, we will probably talk a lot about Standard.
Yes.
And it will be a good catch up because we talked a lot last week and that was after an SCG event or two SCG events. But next week is when we'll actually see what the format looks like for most of the oncoming year. So tune in for that. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Even though tuning in makes no sense.
Tune in anyway.
This has been episode number 431 of Monday Night Magic. Thank you all very much for listening and go play some magic.